food was amazing. JJ's dad wouldn't have it any other way. And it was champagne, not cava.
Oh, God forbid they serve cava. How day class A. And then to add insult to injury, I had to sit with your supermodel ex-girlfriend.
Afric and I broke up 12 years ago, Sarah. And she's always been nice to you, hasn't she?
Of course Afric has always been nice to me. Super nice. Afric is just perfect. Saint fucking Afric.
Jesus, Sarah.
Oisín said, suddenly sober.
What do you want from me?
She didn't have an answer to that.
I have to get back to the top table, he said.
Sarah watched him walk away from her before she remembered that other people might be paying attention, whispering about the state of Sarah and Oisín's relationship. Not long for this world, I reckon, she imagined Oisín's UCD mates saying to each other. She quickly ducked into the nearest bathroom. Sitting on the toilet, she took her phone from her bag. Don't do it, Sarah. This is pathetic. But she couldn't help herself. Florence Kavanagh, she typed in. It was always Florence she Googled. It was always Florence's face she ended up staring at in toilet cubicles and deserted bus stops, and at night when she couldn't sleep. Oisín snoring in bed beside her. Florence's cut-glass cheekbones, Florence's ice-blonde hair. Florence was what Matthew wanted, and so Florence continued to be the yardstick against which Sarah measured herself.
What do you want, Sarah?
She heard Oisín's voice saying as she stared at herself in the bathroom mirror. I want you to be nicer to your boyfriend, Sarah mouthed at her reflection. I want you to forget about Matthew Brennan. I want you to grow up and move on. It seemed so simple when she said it like that. Sarah knew that she should find Oisín, apologize for being cruel to him. But where would she even begin? It had been a year of small cruelties, subtle digs and put-downs. Months of rolling away from him in bed because Oisín insisted on looking into her eyes and telling her that he loved her. Their sex life was gentle, tender, and a part of Sarah wanted Oisín to be more forceful, to do what Matthew had done and use her body for his own. Sarah wanted to be able to drift away and pretend like this wasn't her boyfriend, this wasn't her body, this wasn't her life. She wanted to pretend that none of this was happening to her. She slipped down the corridor outside the bathrooms, a narrow alcove lined with photographs of Irish authors, all male, of course, Una would have complained. Female artists are never given the respect they deserve. She would go to bed, she decided. She would take off her makeup and get into her pajamas. She would not look at her phone. She would take a diazepam and she would sleep.
It's not the same anymore.
Sarah stopped. There were few voices in this world that would snap her in two with recognition, no matter how distracted she was. Her Nana Kathleen had been one, her father, then Fionn, her mother for a time, and now Oisín. Matthews had never been one of them. He had never given her enough time to learn his voice. Sarah saw there was a room tucked away here, the walls lined with bookshelves. JJ and Oisín were sitting on the leather couch, bottles of beer in hand.
I thought it would be different when... I know, Oisín. It's like nothing I ever do is right.
I know, JJ said again.
I'm tired, Oisín said. I don't know how much longer I can do this.
He covered his eyes with one hand.
Fuck, I'm sorry to dump all of this on you. Today of all days.
Man, don't be stupid.
It's obvious to all of us that...
Sarah left before JJ could finish. It might not have been how it sounded, she thought to herself. The possibility of what she had heard might have heard Sarah, too overwhelming to deal with right now. She pressed the button for the elevator, smiling at the elderly couple who got in the lift with her. Yes, yes, what a gorgeous day. Yes, you're right. I'm on the groom's side. And didn't the bride look fabulous? And the food was great. It's hard to get food right for that many people, but I guess you'd have to expect that from the O'Mahonys. They know their food, to be fair. Jay's Tavern does have a Michelin star, and you don't get Michelin stars if you don't know your food. Sarah got off on the third floor, telling them to enjoy the rest of their night. Card indoor, not working. Trying it again, the red light flashing. Sarah jammed the card into the door again and again until, finally, it worked. She walked up the spiral staircase inside their suite and grabbed the small makeup bag on the bedside locker. She took her contraceptive pill and a diazepam, plugging her phone in to recharge. She swiped through her apps, telling herself this would be the last time she did this, the very last time. Matthew Brennan had checked his WhatsApp at 12:14 a.m., she saw. Was he out with friends? Dinner at L'Écrivain? Drinks afterwards? Matthew nursing a single glass of whiskey as the other's eyes turned bleary? And there would be women. There were always women. She felt the badness rise in her, a hungry thing. She had failed. She should have kept her mouth shut and her legs open. She should have taken whatever crumbs Matthew had been willing to give her and been happy with that. She had wanted too much, and she had lost him, and now she would lose Oisin. Sarah looked at the four-poster canopy bed, the white linen draping to touch the floor, the cavernous wardrobe that looked as if Narnia might be waiting if you ever found your way to the back of it. Oisin's clothes were thrown on the floor, expensive sunglasses on top, because who cared if Sarah accidentally stood on them and broke them? They're only things, Oisin would say. I can get another pair. Sarah used to find that endearing, Oisin's blind acceptance of his wealth. Not even endearing. She had found it intoxicating. Matthew had had money, of course, but she didn't have access to it. She wasn't Matthew's girlfriend or his partner. She was nothing to him. With Oisin, Sarah had begun to understand that there would always be enough. She had felt safe. But she wasn't safe because it wasn't her money. She wasn't the one paying for the Ocean View suite in this five-star resort. She wasn't the one whose parents gave them a house in Booterstown to live in, rent-free. "Isn't it cool?" she had said to Eddie before she moved in, showing him photographs on her phone.
"Very nice," he said. "And very generous of Oisin's parents to let you two live there. But I hope you're paying your own way, Sarah."
And she had tried, in the beginning. She would pay for half of dinner at Blowfish or Jay's Tavern, or whatever restaurant the lad said was the new cool place. But after a while, she didn't even make a half-hearted reach for her wallet. She couldn't afford it, and Oisin didn't mind. He liked to be generous with his money. Or with Una's money, to be precise. Sarah pushed the heavy curtains back, cream embossed with the faintest imprint of lilac flowers. "Beautiful," her Nana Kathleen would have said, caressing the fabric, "but fierce and practical." Sarah wished that she didn't always think about how much things might have cost, or whether or not they were good value for money. "Jesus," she'd said to Oisin when she had first seen the ivory-white carpet in their living room, "how on earth are we going to keep that clean?"
"Don't worry," he said. "Magda comes twice a week. She'll take care of it."
Sarah smiled, but she had felt embarrassed that she didn't automatically realize that, of course, there would be a Magda. There was always a Magda for people like Oisin. She opened the patio doors out onto the balcony. There were column candles in glass urns, rolling the air into vanilla and musk. She sat on one of the wooden rocking chairs on the terrace, pulling the cashmere blanket up to her neck. The diazepam was softening her limbs, making her mouth tender. She would sleep, she told herself again. She would sleep, and when she woke up, everything would be fine. She would love Oisin, and she would forget Matthew. Easy! Sarah stared blankly at the black sea, at the moonlight lacing its glimmer through the waves. She wished Fionn was here. He would hold her hand in the silence, and Sarah would feel calm. But Fionn wasn't here. Sarah had fucked that up, too. She tried to stand, but her body was limp. She wanted to be nearer to the water, to wind seaweed through her hair like ribbons. She would be a mermaid. She would be a siren calling men to their graves. She would live forever in the depths of the ocean's belly. She would forget. She would forget all of this. Then.
Miss! Miss!
Yes, Adon, I said. What is it now?
You have a hole in your tights,
he said, hinging his chair on his back legs while clinging onto the desk for balance. He grinned, revealing spinach stuck in his braces from lunch. Yes, Adon, I'm aware of that, thank you, you little asshole. Now, could you please stop? The final bell rang.
Okay, boys, please leave your work on your desk, but put all the chalk pastels and any other supplies you were using back in the supply cupboard. And remember, I expect that coursework to be completed when you come back after the midterm.
The scrape of chairs against the tiled floors, boys grabbing the back of each other's jumpers, tripping one another up, screams of laughter when one of them fell to the ground. I stayed in my seat until they left, an indistinguishable mob of sloppy, untucked shirts and oddly vulnerable-looking necks exposed by buzz cuts. I smiled at the one or two who told me to have a good weekend, miss. And then there was quiet. I walked through the room, I should, weaving my way around desks covered in graffiti, Jamie fingered Rachel, and Miss O'Brien is hot, etched into the wood with a compass or scribbled with permanent marker. I haven't talked to him in, staring at the pathetic attempts at sunsets and ice-capped mountains, and swans floating on glass-still lakes. He's by himself in that house, and I, gathering the pieces of paper up and resisting the urge to tear them to shreds. Whatever I might have told their parents, I did think the talent was more important than the kid's creative expression. I sat at my desk again, holding my iPhone in my hand. What would Nana want you to do, Sarah?
Hello?
Hi, Dad.
Sarah, is that you? Your voice sounds different.
How does my voice sound different?
I don't know. It's been a while since I've heard from you.
I rang you last Friday. That's not a while. He coughed into the phone, scraping mucus from the back of his throat. I knew what a good daughter would say. That's a bad cough you have, Dad. Are you all right? Do you want me to come down to Dunfinan to mind you?
How's work?
He asked.
I'm proud of you, Sarah. It wasn't easy getting such a good job teaching, and straight out of college as well. You're mighty, do you know that?
Thanks, Dad, I said. What are you up to for the weekend?
Not much. Mass on Sunday, I suppose.
My father would go to 12 o'clock Mass, like he always did. He stood outside the back entrance of the church, nodding at his friends. They never talked to each other. They just stood there in a respectful silence, only going inside when it was time to get communion. They left immediately afterwards, the host barely dissolved on their tongue, their duty done.
It's a pity you can't come home for any of your breaks, Sarah. I'd love to see you.
I would if I could, Dad, but Fionn needs me right now. The exhibition opens in 10 days.
Ah, sure, I know. I'm delighted for Fionn.
He coughed again.
Have you been doing any painting yourself these days?
No.
Right.
He paused.
Well, tell Fionn I said congratulations. It was very nice of him to send me the invitation to the opening.
It was.
I could still come, you know. I'd like to be there.
But you have the cattle mart the morning after, Dad. I gripped the phone tightly. No point in changing your plans at this stage.
Yes, he said. That's true.
We talked for another few minutes, or rather, he talked and I listened.
Ah, you do know him, Sarah. He's one of the Mahers. His father died last year and there was fierce trouble between the sons over the will. I told you all about it. Massive funeral. We were queuing outside the funeral home for hours and it was lashing rain. You do know him. They have the big stone house a half a mile past the old convent. See, I told you that you knew him. Huh? Oh, nothing. He was just asking for you is all. Said he never sees you in Dunfinan anymore. Apparently his sister is in Dublin too. She's working for an accountancy firm up there. On big money. 80 grand a year, he said. But she comes home every weekend. Which is nice, I thought. No, I'm not trying to make you feel guilty. I never said that. I never said that, did I? You're being silly now. Sarah, please don't shout at me. I said, don't shout at me. I can't talk to you when you're in one of these moods. I have to go. I do. I do have to go. Bye. Bye. No, I'm not angry. Just come home soon, will you? Okay. Okay. Bye. Bye.
Bye. Bye. Bye. And I sat there, thinking of all the things I should have said to my father. I don't come home because I still haven't forgiven you, Dad. Even though I know it wasn't your fault. I know you didn't mean it. I know you were sick and sad, and Nana Kathleen said you were trying your best, but...
Sarah, isn't it?
Jesus!
I banged my knee off the desk with fright, hissing with the pain.
You scared the fu-
I stopped myself.
You scared me.
I'm sorry.
The man standing by the doorframe said.
I didn't hear you come in.
You were busy,
he said. And I could tell by his tone that he'd heard me talking to my father.
Well,
I said, trying to regain my professional bearing. How can I help you, Mr... How can I help you?
You don't remember me, do you?
Of course I do,
I said, trying to buy some time. Tanned, ridiculously tall, handsome, I guess, for an old man. Broad shoulders.
Shoulders. Harry's father.
Correct. Glad to hear that I'm not entirely forgettable.
Right, I said. What can I do to help you, Mr. Brennan?
I came to collect Harry.
Harry wasn't in class today.
Yes, he said. I've just been made aware of that.
He stood there, watching me. Had he come here to hit on me? Besides the fact that I was his son's teacher, I was about 100 years younger than him. Why did men think that was in any way acceptable? When I was in college, our lecturers encouraged us to go to exhibitions and gallery shows to network with more established artists. It's important to make contacts, they said. Cramped spaces and sitar music, and young girls in black circulating with warm white wine. The artists at the events were generally men in their 50s and 60s, and sometimes even their 70s. They would talk about their careers, how their wives didn't understand them, and their children resented them for devoting more time to their work than helping with homework or shouting encouragement from the sidelines at school matches. The art scene is unfair, they would tell me. It's all about who you know. They could see I was talented, they said, and they wanted to make sure that I succeeded. If I had taken their help, would I be a working artist now? Men like Fionn made it on talent, but women like me had to entertain a decrepit predator, their eyes trained firmly on my tits as they talked about how skilled I was with my paintbrush. Or was I just making excuses? Other women I knew made art, art that sold, art that was lauded by critics and buyers alike. It was unlikely that all of them had fucked their way to success. Maybe as ever the answer was simple. I wasn't good enough. I never had been.
I was walking past the classroom, Harry's father said to me, and I heard a raised voice. It sounded like you were upset.
I'm fine, just a disagreement with my father.
Fathers can be easy to disagree with,
he said, peering at a painting that he had obviously identified as Harry's.
We were supposed to be going to Boston today.
What? I said.
Harry and me. We were going to Boston. It's his birthday on Monday, and it seemed like the perfect excuse, what with it being the midterm as well. But Flo wants him to stay with her, and that's that, apparently.
Well, I said, birthdays are important to some mams. They like to make them special.
Yes, he said. They do, don't they?
It was nearly 6 p.m. by the time I finished, waving goodbye to Mrs. Burke as I passed her office. She was sitting at her desk, the computer tinting her face green.
Only leaving now, Sarah?
Yes, Mrs. Burke. I thought I might reorganize the supply cupboard. I like to keep it nice and tidy, I said to impress her.
Well,
She looked at the paperwork on her desk. You were late in this morning. Damn, I was hoping she hadn't noticed. I'm sure you had some catching up to do. Night had fallen outside, thirsty for any patch of light and sucking it dry. I didn't feel like battling the February winds to the DART station, so I joined the pushing queue onto the bus instead. I stood, clinging on to a tiny section of a steel pole, pressed in between two office workers in sensible shoes and beige trenches. The bus smelled of sweat, undercut by an orange that an elderly woman was eating, dropping the peel to the floor. No one else said anything, earbuds in, and staring at the ground or their iPhones or their Kindles.
Honey, I'm home,
I said back at the house. I threw my coat over the banister.
Fionn?
I ran up the stairs, inhaling paints and methylated spirits as I stood by the door to the studio.
Hey,
I said. He didn't reply.
Fionn,
I said again.
Fionn?
What? He snapped. The canvas looked as if black wax had melted all over it, sucking you into the unrelenting darkness.
I'm trying to work.
I can see that. It's intense, I said. But that kind of stuff doesn't sell, does it?
Nah, too uncompromising to be commercial, according to Kevin.
Isn't it a waste of time, then?
It's good for the soul. One for me,
he said, then pointed at the stack of paintings behind him.
10 for them.
Listen, do you want some smoke?
I'm flat out here,
he said, bending over to scrape at the paint with his fingernail.
10 days to showtime.
Cool, I said. Good luck with it. I left, going into my bedroom and closing the door behind me. Stupid, I told myself. That was a stupid thing to do. I looked at the murals that Fionn painted last year, touching my hand to the wall.
We'll never get our deposit back,
Aaron had said, fretting so much I had to promise him that I would lock the door any time the landlord came to visit. Fionn had decided to turn my room into the sea, so that my bed would feel like a raft in the middle of the ocean.
You can float away any time you want that way,
he said, once again demonstrating an understanding of who I was that no one else ever seemed to be able to match. It had taken him weeks to complete the mural. I would stand and watch, mentally reciting the names of the paints he used. Cobalt blue, Windsor green, French ultramarine, oxide of chromium, cerulean. No, I said when Fionn handed me a paintbrush and asked me to join in. No, you do it. You're so much better than I am. When he was finished, he guided me into the bedroom with his hands over my eyes.
What do you think?
He had asked, and I tried not to cry out when I saw it, at how easily he had rolled water around his paintbrush. I could never capture the truth of the sea, not the way that I wanted to. And I knew then that I would die wanting to try, and I would die being too afraid to even begin.
It's perfect, Fionn,
I told him.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
But today the walls felt as if they were squeezing around my narrow bed. Panic had its hands around my neck, resting its fingertips at the base of my throat, like it did when I was a child.
He'll be home soon, I used to whisper in the dark. He'll be home soon. Hold your breath and count to 100. He'll be home when you wake up for school in the morning, and everything will be okay.
Why won't you come home, Sarah? Why won't you come home?
Now. Sarah leaned over the kitchen sink as she smoked a cigarette out the window. Oisin had left his dishes in there. Hardened crumbs of porridge were sticking to the side of the bowl and the saucepan, and it was so revolting that Sarah could hardly stand it. Why did Oisin insist on eating porridge anyway? It was the 1st of July. No one ate a cooked breakfast in July. Clearly, Oisin expected Sarah to clean up after him because she was on her school holidays. He would deny that, of course, saying he wanted to support her. Why else would he always be encouraging her to paint, to get back into Una's studio? But really, what was the point of her doing so? Sarah was never going to make any money from her art. She was never going to be good enough.
But if you aren't painting,
Ushing asked her,
then what do you do all day?
What do I do all day?
Sarah repeated. Do you want me to keep a diary? I didn't realize I had to report to you, Ushing, she said, shouting after him as he left the room. But thanks for letting me know. I'll bear that in mind in the future. He slammed the bedroom door.
Asshole,
she said under her breath. What do you do all day, Sarah? She watched porn, the women waxed clean and dead-eyed, screaming their pleasure as if it were pain. She wondered if they were faking it, like she used to do with Matthew. Had he known that she was pretending? Could he tell, and just didn't care as long as he was satisfied? And she had smiled through it all and said, "Do it again, Matthew. Do it again. Do it again." Other days she got stoned and lay on the couch, staring at the ceiling, thinking about him and the things she let him do to her. "Touch yourself," he had told her. "I want to see you touch yourself." Sarah's hands inched down her body, searching for relief, skin flushing red. And she couldn't tell if it was with shame or excitement. Maybe they were the same thing, she thought. Her phone beeped. She stubbed out the cigarette on the outside windowsill and put it in the bin. It was probably her school friend's WhatsApp group, requesting photos from the wedding last weekend.
You promised us that you'd send them on the day, Kira had complained. I wanted to see Afric Conroy's outfit. She's such a riot.
Kira. Hi, Auntie Aisling and Auntie Sarah. Mammy has put me in a new outfit for our day out shopping. Do you like it? There was a photo of Kira's ugly baby, dressed in a pink sundress and matching hat. Aw, Aisling replied. Holly has gotten so cute. Sarah texted Aisling immediately. Sarah. Cute? It's like Noel Gallagher and Matt Lucas had a love child. Aisling. It's her daughter. What exactly do you expect me to say, Sarah? It had been well over 3 years since Kira had announced she was pregnant by texting Sarah and Aisling a screenshot of the ultrasound. Sarah and Matthew had still been together then, and as she stared at the formless blob, Sarah thought about what she would have done if this had been her ultrasound, her baby. Kira was only 24 then, and it was an accident, she had said, as if she had simply tripped and fallen over, scraping her knee. But it's fine, Kira kept saying. She and Owen were engaged anyway. They were building a house on a site that his parents had given them, saving every last penny they earned.
This is just an acceleration of our plans,
Kira had explained, and Sarah wasn't sure if she was trying to persuade her friends or herself. When Holly was born, Owen had sent photos from Kira's phone. Mammy and baby both doing well, the caption said. Kira red-faced and teary, the baby raw, wrinkled, its head warped from the forceps birth. Sarah couldn't stop looking at it, unable to believe that someone she had gone to school with had actually given birth. It had been Kira whom Sarah had gotten drunk with for the first time, downing straight vodka they'd stolen from Kira's parents. It was Owen who had given them their first pill at Electric Picnic when they were 17. Sarah had been scared, but Kira had bitten it in two, handing half to Sarah and telling her not to be such a fucking wuss. And now she was a mother. Holly was no longer a bump under increasingly unflattering maternity wear. She was a human being, and Kira and Owen had created her. How had Kira been ready for that responsibility, when Sarah felt as if she had been treading water for the last 10 years?
Oisin, I'm going for a few drinks after work. I'll be home late.
Sarah, where are you going? I might come in to meet you. She waited, checking her phone every few seconds, but there was no reply. She tried to call him, but it went straight to voicemail.
Oisin, she said. Oisin, give me a call when you get this, okay?
She went into the living room, pushing aside the cream gauze curtain hanging from a stone archway so she could walk down the hallway. Up the stairs, in and out of all the rooms. When Oisin wasn't here, Sarah felt as if she was trespassing, as if Una or William would arrive immediately and call the guards. She hesitated at the door to Una's studio, before pushing the door open. "Oh, don't call it my studio," Una kept insisting. "It's yours now." But how could Sarah think of the studio as anything but Una's? The splashes on the floor were from Una's work. The walls were tacky with remnants of blue tack and tape where Una had stuck postcards and New Yorker cartoons and photographs, whatever she was using for inspiration at any given time. This was the room in which the Howl at the Moon collection had been conceived. Crushed flowers dripping blood from their buds. A stunning commentary on the patriarchy's fear of menstruation, the art critic in The Observer had called it. Una was the best female artist to emerge from Ireland in the last 50 years. "I don't know why they insist on calling me a female artist," Una sighed. "I'm not sure what my gender has to do with anything." And this room felt like hallowed ground to Sarah. Every time she picked up a paintbrush, she thought of Una's success, of Una's reputation. And fear would climb her limbs like ivy, stuffing its tendrils down her throat until she couldn't breathe. Sarah sat by the window, scraping at a little clot of red. Cadmium red, perhaps? Medium hue? On the wooden floor, holding a flake of it closer to her face so she could examine it, pushing all other thoughts away from her. She stared at that sliver of paint, waiting until the darkness came, waiting until it breathed into her eyes and turned everything black. Then.
"Where the fuck have you been?" "Fionn, I said that we had to leave no later than 6. I told you that."
"I know," I said, throwing my satchel on the ground. "But Mrs. Burke was being a..."
"I don't want to hear your bullshit excuses," Fionn said. "I'm leaving. You can make your own way into town."
He slammed the living room door behind him. Robbie and Aaron were watching me, Aaron sighing.
"Sarah."
As if he was my father.
"It's not my fault."
"It never seems to be your fault, does it, Fitz?" Aaron said, following Fionn. "Rob, you coming?"
he called over his shoulder.
"You can go," I said to Robbie. "Don't worry about me."
"You have 20 minutes, he said. "Get ready as fast as you can. I'll phone Kevin and tell him to hold off until we get there."
At the gallery, a waiter passed me and I took a glass of white wine from his tray.
"Keep them coming," I said under my breath.
The gallery was a small space, but Kevin had been clever with it. Pale wood floors, cream walls, the front wall made entirely of glass to make the most of the natural light. Fionn's work could be imposing, overwhelming almost, but this was the perfect venue to show it off. I could hear people whispering about him as they walked around the exhibition.
"Very important," they said. "Such an exciting new talent. He's going places, this one."
I wanted to tell them to stop talking about him like that. It was just Fionn. It was my Fionn.
"Oh, my God. Sarah, is that you?"
"Olivia," I said, trying not to grimace.
"Wow. What a surprise to see you here."
She looked the same, an expensive scarf knotted in her curly red hair, dark lipstick and pale skin. Had Fionn invited her? Why would he do that? He knew how I felt about her and Matilda.
"It's so nice to see you,"
she said, kissing me on both cheeks. Everyone did that at art college, some European affectation that they had picked up from their parents, I presumed. I tried to imagine how it would be received in Dunfinan, and almost laughed out loud.
"You look great."
"So do you," I said. "I love your headscarf. Hermes?"
"I got it for 4 euro in the St. Vincent de Paul, so I doubt it," she said. "But thank you. Isn't this deadly?"
She waved at the room around us.
"I can't believe how many people are here. I always knew Fionn would do well. His stuff at DAC was fab, wasn't it?"
Fionn had been one of the only people in our year who had elected to work in a more traditional medium. It wasn't fashionable at the time. Not next to Olivia's collection of embalmed mice, painted to look like ladybirds, or Rory's exploration of lost masculinity in an increasingly matriarchal society through performance art. But Fionn always did what Fionn wanted. I worked with oils too. Not that anyone had cared. I couldn't compete with him. No one could.
Are you two together now?
Me and Fionn? I asked. God, no, we're just friends.
I always thought you would end up together, she said. Didn't you have a thing at college?
You don't have to pretend with me, Fionn had said that night as we lay down together on his bed, and it frightened me that he knew I was pretending in the first place. When he fell asleep, I thought of all the ways that I could fuck this up. I would hurt him. I would lose him. Last night was a mistake, I told him the next morning. We're better off as friends, don't you think? And we agreed to forget that it had ever happened. I'm not really a commitment type of girl, I said to Olivia. Fionn and I are like brother and sister at this stage. We live with two other lads that I met during my postgrad.
That's awesome,
she said, rubbing lipstick off the edge of her glass.
I'm still living at home with my parents in Rathfarnham. I can't afford to move out while I'm working on my debut collection.
Still dealing with the mice?
Mice?
She looked puzzled.
Oh, God! The mice! Stop! I'm mortified even thinking about them. The shit I did at college. I was so paranoid that people would figure out I wasn't a real artist, whatever the hell that is. The rubbish we all used to talk. No, I'm using acrylics now, actually.
Cool, I said. Are you nearly done?
I hope so. I'm sick of being broke. My parents have been great, but I can't live off them forever, can I? I've had to sign on the dole for the last few months. I know, she continued when she saw my expression. I'm a disgrace, but Dublin is expensive. I'm thinking about moving to Lisbon. A few of the DAC gang are there. Rent is cheap, apparently, as is the drink. Jonathan Gilmartin has been on at me to head out there. Do you remember Jonathan? I shook my head and she laughed. He would be devastated to hear that. He had such a crush on you in college. Not that you would have noticed. You were always so self-contained, just doing your own thing. I wish I had been like that at 18. She said, her smile fading when I didn't respond.
So, what did you say you were up to again? I teach art at a private secondary school.
That's deadly, she said. I wish I could do that. But I hate children, which seems like it might make the job a tad difficult. I probably shouldn't say that, should I?
Olivia, I say. Olivia, you don't have anything on you, do you?
It's wonderful to see you, Sarah.
Fionn's mother, Fidelma, said to me. She was slight, the sort of thin that came from living on her nerves. Her wiry frame drowned in a cerise suit jacket and fitted skirt.
And you?
I took another sip of wine. Olivia wasn't carrying. Sorry, Sarah, she'd said. I can't afford it. This is the first time I've been out in weeks. So I had been forced to drink more.
I can't believe how many people are here,
Fidelma said, looking around the gallery. She smiled at her husband.
Can you believe it, Neil?
You're to drink the free wine, I bet,
Fionn's father said, leaning against one of the paintings a little too casually for my liking.
So, she turned to me, how are things with you, Sarah? Are you doing a line with anyone?
No, Fidelma, I said. I didn't think the type of lines I was doing were something Fidelma and Neil would approve of.
Still single? Oh, don't worry, you'll meet someone yet, she said.
Fidelma was clearly still hopeful that Fionn and I would end up together, and I wished I could tell her that that ship had sailed.
A pretty girl like you would be snapped up in no time.
Thank you.
And how's work? She asked.
Fair play to you for getting that job,
Neil said, animated for the first time that evening.
That was a piece of luck.
Yes, I said. Very lucky.
Fidelma,
Neil said.
Isn't that Matthew Brennan over there?
He pushed himself up to standing, the painting quivering in his wake, and I rushed to steady it.
Oh, dear?
Jesus, Fidelma,
Neil said.
The real estate guy. He owns MBA.
Kevin had also spotted Matthew and was manoeuvring his way to the door so he could shake his hand and take his coat, calling a waiter over to offer Matthew a glass of wine. They talked for a few minutes, Kevin laughing at whatever Matthew was saying. Kevin handed him a brochure, then mouthed, "Take care of him," at a waiter behind Matthew's back.
"Do you think he will buy something?"
Neil said loudly, people nearby turning to stare at him, and I tried not to wince. Matthew also looked around to find the culprit, his face disdainful. Then he saw me and he smiled, as if I was the very person he had been hoping to see.
"Does he know you, Sarah?"
Fidelma asked as Matthew waved me over. I didn't answer her. I seemed to be moving, even though I didn't want to, as if my legs were being controlled by the mere force of his will.
"Well, well, well," he said when I was in front of him. "If it isn't Sarah Fitzpatrick. It's been ages since we last met."
"It was like a week ago." He tottered when he saw that my glass was empty.
"That won't do, will it?"
He barely had to turn around before a waiter jumped to service, filling it with a, "Sorry, miss." "What are you doing here?" I asked him.
"Hi, Sarah. It's good to see you too. Isn't it nice that we're all here supporting the arts on such a wet and miserable February night?"
"Seriously," I said, "what are you doing here? Nothing better to do?" His smile slipped just for a second.
"No," he said. "Kevin invited me. I'm kind of a big deal."
I had just taken a sip of wine and almost spat it out.
"Jesus Christ." "I wouldn't compare myself to Jesus Christ, but you're more than welcome to do so if you wish."
"Who says that about themselves? Are you for real?"
"Always," he said, and I raised an eyebrow at him. "Fine. The truth is that Kevin and I went to school together, and he invites me to any exhibitions that he thinks I'll find interesting."
"You went to Clongowes too?" I said.
"How do you know that Kevin went to Clongowes?"
"I think there's a rule that anyone who goes to Clongowes has to say that they went to Clongowes within 5 seconds of meeting you."
"You're very funny," he said, but he didn't laugh. "But yes, I did attend Clongowes."
"You're not from Dublin, though, are you?" I asked. "I can't figure out your accent."
"I'm from Limerick," he told me. "A mere blow-in."
"No good schools in Limerick?"
"None," he said. "My father had notions, only son and all that. Although I don't think my mother would have been too keen on the idea of boarding school, to be honest."
"She spoiled you, didn't she? Mama's boy."
"Well," he said, "it wasn't until she died."
"What about Harry?" I said quickly. "He's an only son too, right?"
"My ex-wife also had notions, but they didn't include turning Harry into a mini Matthew. Fate worse than death, according to Flo."
He pointed at the painting.
"You were right. Your friend is incredibly talented."
"Hey, Fitz." Fionn snuck up on us, an arm around my stomach. He seemed to have forgiven me, the success of the evening and a couple of glasses of wine mellowing his anger. "Ah, here is the man of the moment," I said. "Matthew, this is Fionn McCarthy, the incredibly talented artist. Fionn, this is Matthew Brennan. He's kind of a big deal, apparently."
"I didn't know the two of you were an item," Matthew said, looking from me to Fionn and then back at me. "We're not."
"Hey," I said, elbowing Fionn in the ribs. "No need to sound quite so relieved."
"Your work is very impressive, Fionn," Matthew said.
"Cheers."
"I'm particularly taken with this one."
Matthew gestured at the painting in front of us.
"I'm going to buy it."
"You can't have that one, I'm afraid," Fionn said.
"Why not?"
"That one isn't for sale."
Matthew looked at the pricing list, scanning down until he found the right one.
"I'll pay you 3 times as much as they're asking for it."
"I told you it's not for sale,"
Fionn said again.
"Fine,"
Matthew said, and for some reason I wanted to reach out and touch his face. Tell him that it would all be okay.
"Congratulations on the exhibition."
"What was that about?" I asked when Matthew had gone. We were still facing the painting, Fionn with his arms around me.
"I don't like him."
"You don't even know him."
"I know his type,"
Fionn said.
"And why are you defending him? Do you fancy him or something?"
Of course I don't fancy him, but there was no reason to be rude. He could be an important contact for you. He's supposed to be minted.
He can't have this painting.
You don't need the money all of a sudden?
No. It's because this one is for you. Harbor Skies.
He whispered into my ear. The canvas was enormous. It must have been 67 by 38 inches at least. An ochre sky bleeding into a murky sea.
Remember?
We were in Fionn's house in Cove last year. His parents had gone to Spain for a few days, so we had the place to ourselves.
Don't worry about supplies, girl, Fionn told me. I have everything in my room at home.
Packets of Haribo on the car dashboard, never mind on repeat, tapping cigarette ash out of the rolled-down windows, bitching about Amelia, Aaron's new girlfriend.
She's awful, we agreed. What is he doing with her?
Fionn's place was tiny. One of the many grey houses squeezed together in a terraced row, a scrappy patch of grass in the front. That night, we had taken pills, grinning as feathers unfurled in the back of our skulls, blooming large in our eyes. Hours later, we were coming down, our bodies wrecked, but our brains too wired to sleep, when Fionn decided he wanted to go to the harbour to watch the sunrise. It was so quiet there, the light feeling like water on my skin. We found a bench to sit on, and for once, I felt as if everything might be okay.
I do remember, I said now. But Fionn, I can't take this.
I want you to have it.
It's too much. You need the money.
This piece is you.
It's us.
I couldn't have made it without you.
Okay. I told myself not to cry. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I'm sorry about earlier.
Forget about it, he said. Look at all these people. Kevin said all the paintings are sold.
Already, Fitz?
He turned me around to face him.
This is it, he said. This is just the beginning.
I'm so proud of you, Fionn, I said, and I was, or I wanted to be. Maybe that would have to be enough for now.
I kissed him on the cheek and walked away, pushing a path through thin women in black sheath dresses, men in patterned cravats, grabbing another 2 glasses of wine on my way. I woke with shards of glass shattering in my skull. I was in my underwear, and there was blood scabbing on my knees and smeared on the sheets. Fionn was next to me, wearing only his boxers, the duvet half thrown off him. I breathed through my nose, tasting the vomit as a promise.
What had happened last night? How did I get home? And what time was it now?
I fumbled around the bed until I found my phone.
Fuck, 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 fuck!
It was 10:45 a.m. There were 5 missed calls from the school, 2 from Mrs. Burke's personal mobile, and 3 voicemails.
Fionn!
I kicked him on the shin.
Fionn! Wake up right now!
He groaned.
I'm serious, Fionn!
Jesus Christ!
He sat up squinting.
What is it?
It's 10:45.
So?
So I was supposed to be at work 3 hours ago.
Call in sick, he said.
I can't just call in sick. Burke is already pissed off with me.
I looked at my phone again, unsure if I was brave enough to listen to the voice messages.
Why didn't you wake me?
Maybe because it's not my job to wake you, Sarah. You're an adult woman who should be able to set her own alarm.
Don't be mean to me.
He didn't reply.
Fionn, what happened last night? Did we?
Did we what?
You know what I'm trying to ask. Don't be a dick.
He turned to me.
Are you fucking serious?
I was only asking.
Sarah, you were a mess last night. You were so drunk you could barely stand.
My father thought... Did Matthew Brennan see?
What? No, actually, he had left before you went into complete meltdown. What a relief, since that rich cunt is the only one that matters.
I'm sorry, but it wasn't my fault. I didn't have time to get dinner because you were rushing us out the door.
So it's my fault you were paralytic,
No, of course not. I'm just trying to explain.
I can't believe you.
You know how hard I've been working for this. I was killing myself trying to get ready for last night. I didn't want to leave my own private view party early because I had to put you to bed. I would never have got that drunk if it had been your debut. Oh, fuck off, Fiona. I said I was sorry.
Did you, Sarah? I don't actually think you did say you were sorry.
I...
And then to ask if we hooked up.
He pushed himself up to standing.
I haven't been pretending to be your friend for all these years so I could fucking rape you some night when you were too pissed to know the difference.
I didn't mean it that way.
Yeah. He opened the door. Yeah, I think you did mean it that way.
I should have called Fionn back then, refused to allow him to leave until I explained to him that I was feeling jealous, that I had wanted it to be me last night. But I couldn't admit to that. I didn't want Fionn to know that I was insecure. I didn't want him to feel sorry for me or see me differently.
Fionn, Fionn, please.
The clamoring thoughts were too heavy now, pressing down on me, anxiety swelling in my skeleton until it felt as if the bones might rupture through my skin. Breathe, I told myself. You're fine. Nothing bad is going to happen to you if you keep breathing. My phone beeped, and I reached out to grab it from my locker. Dad. Hi, Sarah. I hope last night went well for Fionn. Give me a call after school if you get a chance. And there was another message. Text. Hi, Sarah. Matthew Brennan here. It was lovely to see you again last night. I sat up in the bed. I hadn't been expecting this. Sarah, how did you get my phone number? Matthew Brennan. Well, that's not very friendly. Matthew Brennan. You gave it to me at the gallery. Told me to contact you if I ever wanted to talk about Harry's artwork. Very kind of you, I thought. Did you have a good evening? Sarah. Too much wine. Sick emoji. Sarah. Do you mind not mentioning this to anyone else? Bit unprofessional of me. Matthew Brennan. Don't worry. It'll be our little secret. I focused on the screen, his name and his words and what this could mean. I didn't think about Fionn. I didn't think about Mrs. Burke. All I could think about was this text message. Matthew Brennan, I said out loud. 15th of February. Matthew Brennan. And how are you spending your Sunday, Miss Fitzpatrick? Sarah, I've told you before, it's Ms. Matthew, oh Christ, you're not one of those, are you? Sarah, one of what exactly? Sarah, and I'm spending my Sunday trying to figure out how I'm going to explain why I didn't turn up for work on Friday. If I lose my job, will you hire me as your assistant? I poor. Sad emoji. Matthew, I don't know about that. I think your talents may lie in other areas. 16th of February. Matthew, watch this video. Sarah, oh, I'm not in the mood. Had a terrible day at work. My boss hates me. Matthew, just watch it. This woman is said to be the heir to Martha Argerich's crown. Sarah, who that is? I'm not old like you. Matthew, just watch the clip. Sarah, whoa, wishing I had kept up my music lessons now. Matthew, she's beautiful, isn't she? Matthew, not as beautiful as you, though. Matthew, is it okay to say that? Sarah, yeah, it's okay. Sarah, thank you. 19th of February. Matthew, doesn't this book look interesting? Sarah, I think it's a little soon to be asking me for presents. Matthew, but I already bought you something. Sarah, what? Did you really buy me something? Matthew, of course. Sarah, I can't believe that. Thank you so much. What is it? Matthew, it's a signed photo of me. It's in the post. Sarah, how thoughtful. Sarah,
It'll be the perfect addition to the Matthew Brennan shrine I've been building in my bedroom. Matthew, ah yes, I know the shrine you speak of, thanks to the technological triumph that is night vision goggles. Sarah, just got weird. Matthew, you liked it, didn't you? Sarah, kind of. Did you? 23rd of February. Matthew, what do you think of this tux? Sarah, 10 fire emojis. Matthew, what is that supposed to mean? Sarah, I hear Grandad. It means you look like a ride. Matthew, I was going for handsome and debonair, Cary Grant style. Sarah, who? Matthew, you don't know who Cary Grant is? What are they teaching you children in school these days? Sarah, I don't know. Why don't you ask Harry? Matthew, touche. Sarah, where are you going? Your life seems so glamorous. Matthew, things are stupidly busy. Meetings, drinking, flirting, more meetings, charity balls where idiots like me get dressed up in order to raise money for charities we don't give a shit about. Sarah, I'm ignore the flirting comment. We both know that I'm your favorite. 24th of February. Sarah, are you hungover? Matthew, I don't drink at these things. It's not professional. Sarah, I think my boss might agree with you. Things are slightly tense at work right now. Matthew, I had to fly to London at the crack of dawn this morning, so it wasn't worth it to me to be hungover. Sarah, I love London. Matthew, it's a wonderful city. You should come with me next time. I always stay in a suite at Claridge's, and really, everyone needs to experience a suite in Claridge's at least once in their lifetime. Sarah, really? That would be amazing. I'd love that. When are you going again? 27th of February. Matthew, I gave a lecture at Oxford today. All those nerds love me. Sarah, cool. Hope you're having fun. Matthew, pots of fun, thank you. Sarah, were you a nerd in school? Matthew, absolutely not. How dare you imply such a thing? Sarah, pity. I ate nerds for breakfast in Dunfinan. Matthew, still hungry? Sarah, I might be. Sarah, when are you back in Dublin? 28th of February. Matthew, are you out in town tonight? I'm having drinks with friends at residence if you want to meet me afterwards. Sarah, I had to go home to Tipperary for the weekend. My dad's not well. Matthew, the country, God help us. I try and avoid Limerick as much as I can these days. Matthew, doing anything fun tonight? Sarah, going out for drinks with the girls from school. Matthew, what are you wearing? Sarah, are you serious? Matthew, yes. Sarah, I'm wearing a skirt so tight I can barely walk. Happy? Matthew, please do not tell me about skirts of that nature on legs like yours when I'm about to meet 4 middle-aged men. I will have concentration issues. Sarah, love the idea of giving you concentration issues. Matthew, I'm distracted. I'm thinking, thoughts. Sarah, what kind of thoughts? Matthew, nothing I could commit to this medium, but you probably have a rough idea, given that you caused them. Sarah, not into sexting, then? I'd better delete the nude pics I was about to text you. Matthew, enough. We need to sort this out. Sarah, sort what out? Matthew, I just looked at my schedule. I'm free on Monday. I'll organize everything. I reapplied my lipstick, my hand shaking a little. Matthew had sent a message 40 minutes ago to say that he was here. I'm in room 63, the text said, Come straight up. Don't ask at reception. It's better if we keep this between ourselves for the time being. Where are you? He texted.